So, after this intermezzo at the beginning, we will continue our considerations on social media. Okay? So, welcome. Forgot this. So, welcome to the, is it the nth edition, right? Okay, cool. So, first of all, Wolfgang asked his audience if they wanted to have it started at 2 sharp. So, do you know that there is the lecture on recommender systems, and there are several people that want to attend that lecture as well, right? So, again, I want to ask you, is there, I know I did it, but I will, for the sake of completeness, is there anyone here that would object switching it 15 minutes back? So we would start 15:15. May I ask for the reason? Is there anything?
Yeah, lectures.
So who's got a lecture at 4:30? So that would be you, right? Someone else except for him, right? You. Okay, cool. And you, if you show up like this, I cannot see it, right? Okay, so there are several of you that object this, so we will have to start at 3 sharp, right? Sorry for that. Good. Okay, so last time we left off discussing the various forms of social media, and as with all those slides that have... Once again, it's me that talks. Please. I cannot concentrate. The others can't concentrate. There's simply no reason. Okay, cool. So we left off with discussing social media forms. And as with all these slides that have a rather list-like character, so the The slides that talked about these game definitions were also of that nature. I encourage you to look through the respective slides and, well, creatively work with them by thinking, can I really adhere to the facts stated on there? So we'll quickly go through that, right? So we had several classifications of social media, several classification axes, and among them was several axes according to which we classified communication, right? And, to go back, there were, various classes that had an emphasis on certain forms of communication. And as you can see, what's written up here in red is usually an overlapping classification form, right? So there is, if we switch there to collaboration-oriented classes, obviously collaboration also has some bias to some forms of communication. So the classes up here in red, the meta classes, are again overlapping, right? So there is nothing like a true taxonomy of social media. So collaboration was somehow marked in brackets, right? Because usually CSCW software and all the components that are targeted at computer-supported collaborative work are not typically considered social media, right? And this becomes apparent if we regard things like GitHub or other revision control systems, because they would rather be perceived as programming tools. However, what we can see is that it has, one-to-N communication, so there is certainly a multi-user aspect about it. It is in aspects about information, so you want to know what the others commit because you just want to collaborate with them. And it certainly overlaps with content-oriented classes that we will see in a few minutes, because obviously this revision control is oriented towards content. And, the collaboration-oriented classes are often also document-oriented, which is for the usual GitHub, for the programming tools. Maybe it's not so much the case, although wait, you may view things like a Java class as a document as well, right? Good. As it's written here, it's typically not considered social media, but it is peripherally matching our definition. So please think about demarcations and, yeah, well, pragmatics in terms of defining the concept of social media. Same is true for content management oriented things such as WordPress that you might know if you have ever been into content management for websites, like things like Typo3, WordPress. They also have this one-to-end undirected, non-anonymous, non-threaded forms of communication. It's textual and graphical. It is typically not mobile because the mobile change of content is something that is not the typical use case. We work with discrete transfer and not streaming. And, well, there is commercial and non-commercial variants. Okay? Good. Then if we, well, go to a more abstract form of social media, you can have community platforms that are targeted towards things that, such as open innovation, right? So the concept of open innovation designates innovation processes in companies, but especially also between companies and single actors, where you open up your innovation process in terms of discovering new business fields that lie at the periphery of your core business model. Okay. One example, I don't know, let's assume you're Nike and one of the board members says, we would like to have internet in the shoe, right? Whatever that means, right? So that's a typical slogan. And maybe you're the poor engineer that is given that parole and you have to make something out of this. Okay, what would that mean to have internet in the shoe? Where would that be? Do we have something in the plastic of the heel of the shoe? Would that be like a smartwatch connection? Would that be like a fitness app? What do you make out of this? Okay, and naturally, if you're a Nike shoe designer, if you've been designing the Air Jordan basketball shoe series for the last 5 years, you know nothing about electronics, okay? And certainly such a slogan is not at the core of the Nike shoe product line. So what you should do is you should ask someone that knows something about electronics, that knows something about social media, smart devices, ubiquitous computing, even smartphones, right? So this is a process where you invite people to an open innovation platform, and in those open innovation platforms, you would then have creativity sessions, things like brainstorming sessions or other creativity techniques, pretty much the stuff that we had in the lab course first assignment, right? Reductive phases, expansive phases. Expansive are phases where you collect ideas, and reductive are phases where you rate them and select them, right? That's why these things are often come in the form of such a funnel, as we had with the design funnel. You start with a lot of different ideas and then you select and reduce them. Okay. And we had several scientific projects in that field, and it has interesting aspects of social media in it. So if you want, you can subsume this under social media, especially the core task of creativity support can be viewed as a social medium, right? And there is a startup that has been funded at our chair, and these are the three guys. The guy at the very right just left the team a while ago, so it's only two of them. And it's about a web-based creativity support system for you to incubate your ideas. Okay? Good. Well, the other side is that we might also put things such as Wikipedia under collaboration, but especially things that aim at the formal codification of Wikipedia knowledge. So we will talk about social semantic web in a few minutes. And DBpedia, for example, is an initiative to encode the knowledge in Wikipedia into semantic web standards, such as RDF and database-like formal structures. And that's then something that is often used in terms of other projects, right? Which in turn are collaboration-oriented, typically, right? Then another very important class of social media is all the forms that have to do with social networking, right? And social networking is here viewed as a paradigm, right? It's a paradigm of social computing or a social media subclass. And obviously, social networking platforms are the typical forms of social media, right? So in these platforms, you have sub-services that support one-to-one communication as well as one-to-N or even M-to-N and all the other forms, right? So the characteristic element is that users explicate their social relations and also user-to-item relations in the forms of likes and ratings on these platforms. And the goals are mainly to maintain and expand your own social network, obviously. Well, a subclass is mobile social networking platforms, where we would make much more use of the mobile contexts that arise through mobile usage. And one such thing is, for example, Foursquare, right? Foursquare can be viewed as a single service. So at the core of Foursquare is this checking into locations in order to provide an awareness service for others who's at a respective location. But since Foursquare also has elements of friends and friendship and other means of social networking, it can be viewed as a mobile social networking platform. Well, location-based social networking platforms are, again, a subset of mobile social networking, of course. Foursquare, again, the central example. And since mobile designates all forms of mobile context, we, in location-based, we would especially build on location as one form of this, okay? Well, another class of social networking, social media, is professional social networking platforms. So we talked about that. One characteristic of social media is that in essence, it's in very many cases outside ordinary life as the games, right? So it has to do with non-professional content. And obviously in professional social networking, the contrary is true, right? So it's about linking employees of large companies. It is about expert finding. It is about knowledge management, project debriefings, and other organizational services that are run under the paradigm of social networking. And a simple example is Xing, which is targeted towards, job finding and self-presentation in terms of your professional profile. But there is full-fledged social networking platforms such as IBM, Blue something, where the employees of IBM are really encouraged to collaborate in and to exchange messages and to, profile themselves in order to be found by others. Okay. Company social networking platforms are, as I said, are a subclass of professional, right? So Xing is not, in essence, a company social networking platform, while IBM Blue, Social Blue is. That was the one I've been looking for in my brain. And, maintain and expand your social network in the company. Find experts, perform yellow page lookups and stuff like that, okay? And one thing that has to be emphasized is that social media, especially blogs and wikis, have established themselves as one key form of knowledge management tools, right? So I already told you about the Munich Knowledge Management Circle and its endeavors about 10 years ago. Nowadays, there's a lot of research about social media in company contexts for knowledge management, for the codification of knowledge. And Michael Koch, who is now a professor at the University of the Armed Forces, did a lot of research on this, and there's a very good small book by him about company-oriented social networking and knowledge management connections. Well, within social networking, you might also subsume, or under that class, you might also subsume anything that goes with friend finding, partner finding, dating, all these other things. Obviously a huge market, and a lot of money is made with that, right? And we had some bachelor thesis investigating in these things with the goal of formalizing interaction patterns there, right, with game theoretical measures, which was very interesting. Obviously, there's a high overlap with social networking, right? And it has, well, typically some other forms of communication. It's more one-to-one oriented, seldomly one-to-end, and it's, well, as you can imagine, it's about communicating text and photos to present yourself, well, with the respective goals. Well, community platforms. So what's the difference between a social network and a community? Well, social network is a formalization or a model of social relations in the form of a graph, right? So a social networking user base populating a social networking platform may be viewed as a community, but communityware and research on communityware has a longer tradition than social networking, right? So about 5 to 10 years longer, and it is, well, communities these days are perceived as something slightly smaller and more specialized than the user bases of social networking platforms. And obviously, it lends itself well to support the interests of special user groups like Gothic, .NET, or others. And Yelp is even a meta community platform where you can host your own community subspace, right? And back in the old days of community research, there were a lot of papers that distinguished communities of interest, communities of practice, and all the other forms of such groupings that were supported by these platforms. Obviously, there is a heavy overlap in terms of services with social networking and sometimes also with open innovation. Okay? Good. Well, switching from social networking to another meta class, namely the goal-oriented classes, right? We have other classes popping up, right? As you can see, there is a heavy overlap in terms of these red classes. So one subclass of goal-oriented classes are altruistic community platforms. And among them are things such as Utopia, don't know if you know that, which supports sustainable consumption in all its forms, may it be in terms of nutrition, environmental protection, other things. Elements such as crowdfunding are very popular here. And, well, the goal is segregated from the others by this adjective of being altruistic or altruistically oriented. Okay. It certainly has an overlap with political community platforms, which is the next subclass. And the typical example a few years ago was the Occupy movement, which neither supported a certain community or which neither have the goal to really expand your social network, but to clearly spread a political message, typically an altruistically oriented political message. And other things which are more controversial include things such as WikiLeaks, right? And there are even more things more to the extremist side, as you know, because these things are discussed in the broad media quite extensively. There is all kinds of Islamistic movements, other things that use these political community structures, but sometimes more as a free-riding version, right? So they use the media of Twitter and other things, but they won't, obviously, for obvious reasons, form a true political community, because then they would be more rightfully targets of prosecution in that form, right? So the goal is a control function as a control instance, as a conscious for organizations, governments, and companies. In case of WikiLeaks, may you support or deny their goals, but it's clearly one, subform which you can give a name for. Then, goal-oriented is also everything that goes under knowledge codification, right? Wikipedia, for example, and DBpedia may be listed here as well. So you can see that the meta classes are, again, clearly overlapping. Well, again, we have a new form, and these are classes with an emphasis on content, okay? And, well, the most prominent example will be YouTube, coming up on the next slide. But first, I listed event-based services, right? It is typically a subclass of awareness services, because if something deals with events, the main form or the main goal is to create awareness of the respective events. You want to be alerted when a good concert comes up, and you want to be aware of what's going on. So the most important communication forms are contextual, in terms of where something is, at which point in space and time. And it is heavily mobile. It may also be desktop, if you just sit at your desktop and look something up. It's more about discrete transfer, not so much about streaming. And it's a good exercise to think of all these classes and try to come up with characterizations of their communication form, right? And typical examples are eventful and others that have to do with events, right? Well, next example, YouTube is already one or two slides ahead, is news platforms, right? So in news, it's also about content, right? And Dig is another platform that has gone down in popularity, I think, a bit, but which was quite popular a few years ago. And here, obviously, it's about news, okay, and news spreading. Again, it is heavily oriented towards awareness as well as information, right? Good. Another important form that we will get to know in the exercise starting May 20th is social search or social information retrieval. One example is this Google search plus an extension that's called Your World, but aspects in Facebook have also come that gear towards social search. So the idea is to either incorporate social context, social network structure into your search, for example, by giving different weights to search results that stem from nodes that are in your neighborhood, or to confine your search to your social neighborhood. And, well, the goal, as it's written here, provide new useful forms of searching. What's the true goal? Well, the true goal is to come up with serendipitous information, right? So if you search for the birth date of Beethoven, you'll be very much content with Google, okay? And if you look for where to go out tonight, you'd be probably better off if you ask your friends, right? And, well, asking for where to go out is already something where your intended answer to your query is, well, a bit more fuzzy. So the unconscious part of your information need is larger than in case of Beethoven's birth date, right? And if something comes up from these services that is in the unconscious part of the information need, we might call this serendipitous information. So that's information that is new, but yet related, somehow related to your information space. Okay? Good. So, next thing, question answering. Ask.com is the international version. Gutefrage.net is the German version of it, right? There's a heavy overlap with things as Stack Overflow and other typical discussion boards, right? And, well, as such, we have certain communication forms, right? Information aggregation is about content syndication, right? So to aggregate content from different sources with goals to organize, personalize, and filter information. And accordingly, the respective protocols are used, right? Again, knowledge codification is somehow the thing that appears under each of these classes, but clearly Wikipedia can be designated as something that has a heavy emphasis on content. Document management, well, you see it's already in brackets because it heavily overlaps with collaboration-oriented, and a typical example would be Google Docs, right? Well, again, the question is Google Docs social media? Probably not. That's why it's put in brackets, but that depends on how technically you want to execute your definition, right? Content sharing is, again, now we're at YouTube and the other guys. This is obviously about sharing something, and the goals are diverse. It's about sharing secret documents, MP3 files, videos, whatever you want, for which purpose you may ever want to do that. So YouTube is full of music videos. It's also full of instructional videos, self-presentation, any goal that we have here. It is also streaming oriented, but also discrete transfer. Depends, right? So these are the typical examples, right? So file sharing has gone down a bit in popularity, at least in the public. Well, people are still using the stuff, BitTorrent, peer-to-peer file sharing stuff, anything that goes under that. Then we have video portals. YouTube is the big example. Photo sharing, Flickr, the big example. And teaching material sharing, where we would have things such as SlideShare, right? And the whole bunch of services like Coursera that hang under that node as well, which aim even at things such as public education, right? So third world participation in high-level education. You know, the famous artificial intelligence class by the Stanford AI guys, okay? Good. Social bookmarking is another form which has an emphasis on content, right? Ich meine auch die Menschen hinter dir. Good. So social bookmarking is about sharing, well, bookmarks, as is the case, right? Mendeley is an interesting service that you might know if you write your thesis, right? So it's about sharing literature and papers, okay? So for almost all the fields in science, there is a subset in Mendeley, which you can expand on. And this is a very interesting form of social bookmarking. Well, rating is another thing which we saw. Well, social networking is about user-to-user relations, but also about user-to-item relations. And one of the key user-to-item relation forms is rating, right? So this is more realized as a subset. For example, as you know, in Amazon and other forms of online trading, but it's something that's really very important, right? So these days, everyone that buys a camera or an anti-reflection screen element or something would first study the respective ratings by other users. And in eBay, you know, everyone is very dependent on the ratings by the customers. Good. Also under that class are social recommender systems, right? So what's a recommender system? Okay, so a recommender system obviously recommends something. And if you want to know about these things, visit Wolfgang's lecture. So one important class of recommender systems is collaborative recommender systems. Yeah. So for example, collaborative filtering. And the idea of collaborative filtering is rather simple. So what you have is a huge matrix. And in that direction, you have the users. And in that direction, you have the items. Okay. And each matrix entry here is the rating of a respective user for the respective item. Well, so we have item number 3, which is rated by user number 2, right? And you could think of ratings in the scale of, let's say, between 0 and 10, right? Ratings in 0 and 10, right? And a recommender system is a system that recommends something. So in essence, the problem is predicting the rating of an unknown item for a given user, right? So we don't know whether user number 2 likes, for example, film number 4, okay? And how can we do that, okay? So the basic idea of collaborative filtering is to find other users. Let's say this one, and maybe this one, that have actually rated that item in question, and then compute a suitable average of their ratings. Well, users that have just rated that cannot be the idea. So the idea is to find the other users that not only have rated the item in question, but that are also similar to the user that I want to predict the rating for, right? That's very simple. So if I'm a Hell's Angel, I don't know, and I like to ride Harley Davidson bikes, and I'm such a guy, then if you want to know whether, well, you like Harry Potter 6, the movie, right? It's better to ask other rockers than just 12-year-old girls, okay? Because the 12-year-old girl would like Harry Potter, whereas the other rockers don't. And that's simple, a very simple algorithm. So you can do the same thing with, so that's a user-based collaborative filtering algorithm. You could do the same thing with the item-based view as well. Just have to transpose the matrix. And the fine details are about how to compute the neighborhood, which users you want to consider, right? And how to do this averaging, okay? One thing, for example, is that you typically subtract the average rating of a user from his or her actual ratings to subtract a certain bias that the user has. So if someone is really very enthusiastic about things in general, you don't want to overemphasize that, so you subtract his or her average rating. And so you get a more realistic version, and so on and so on. It's a whole science. And if you want to know about that, Wolfgang has a lot to say about this in the lecture. Okay. Product reviews are another one here. Okay. Good. So that was an overview of a possibly incomplete classification system for social media. Again, look through these classes and see if you can come up with a different classification system, and well, check the definitions, whether you agree with them or not. What we now want to do is, so we looked at social games. That was our first, second, maybe part of the third lecture. Now we took a course look at social media. What about the connection between those two things? Okay, good. Obviously, we have to start with a definition, and that's just a subsumption of what we have, what we had before, right? Social game is a game in the sense of our definitions. It makes use of digital IT systems, and it makes use of social context, right? So involves certainly typically more than one player, right? It is one of our meta types, but I think that this is a sufficient definition. Well, thing now is, can we put up a comparison of these two things, right? On the left, I collected some of the definition elements of games, and on the right, I aimed at checking whether this is also the case for social media, right? So obviously, free and voluntary, okay, certainly true for most social media. Although we've seen that there is things as company social networking, which are clearly part of the serious life and not about this free voluntary outside of serious life. Well, so that's why the second check mark is in brackets. Okay. It is unproductive. So this is certainly not the case, at least not for things such as Wikipedia. But if you look through the posts that people publish on Facebook, you'll probably agree that it's not very productive. Well, it is subjective. Well, insofar as communication is subjective, it is certainly engaging, absorbing. It has elements of make-believe, well, of this second reality, although there are two brackets, right? And, of course, people use social media for, sustaining and supporting their real-life social contacts. And, it has some elements that resemble this. And it certainly has rules, right? This is a clear thing. It has the system rules set up by Facebook, for example, but it also has social rules that you and all the other users have, won through being educated. It has often not very much material interest, yes, with the mentioned exception. Supports formation of social groupings, yes. We have this element of transformative social play, if you remember that. And, it has certainly to do with play as the identity, right? Self-presentation is the stuff that we talked about with social media, and it has competitive elements as well, right? And with respect to all the social characterization elements of social games, we can clearly set a check mark here for all of them, right? So there is a clear utility function that people have, however implicit it may be. So in games, we have a formalized utility function in many cases in the form of points and scores, whereas in social media, this is implicit, but it's clearly, we can clearly state that, right? It has emotional attachment. It is emergent in the sense of creating emergent social system. Things are approached with a playful attitude, and they can be viewed as systems of information, right? In terms of motivation, we saw a lot of these things that have to do, if you remember, with the Maslow need hierarchy, with flow, with motivation and volition. And very many of these elements can also be found in social media, okay? One thing that's especially important for us, or will be important in an upcoming lecture, the relation between social and spatio-temporal context, right? So, for example, there has been interesting research in how the friendship probability scales with the distance of your center of life, as an example, right? Groups play an important role, which will come up in a later lecture, and things as emotional contagion, the Hawthorne effect, relationship building are clearly also elements of social media, right? Same is true, as I said, for the Maslow stuff as well as for the aspects of fun. Anything can be found here. Socialization, clearly. And sometimes social media can also come up with a narrative structure. Here it would be more like an emergent narrative structure, so people make up their own stories, while in very many social games this narrative structure is prescribed, but it certainly has a lot of emergent elements in that narration as well, right? And the same is true even for things that go down to these elements that we had, which discussed classification systems for games, where we had this elemental tetrad by Schell, which said that a game can be characterized by its mechanics, its story, its aesthetics, and its technology. And if we think about this, well, there is certainly a mechanical element or a game mechanic in each social medium. Each social medium has a clearly defined aesthetics. It's about technology and its access. And, well, the story we already discussed. Well, there is emergent storylets in social media as well, but this is maybe a bit different here. Okay? Good. We even can distinguish certain player types, right? So there's types of social media users. There is this typical hardcore version, people that spend their lives before their Facebook screens, although these individuals become rather, not so frequent these days. So you might have guessed it already, and I've been mentioning it for a few times. There is a large overlap between those two things, and from my point of view, there will be a convergence, at least in parts, where games and social media will converge to new forms. Okay? So while these things are not totally congruent, that would be naive as a story, the overlap is there, it's substantial, and that's what we want to concentrate on basically for the rest of this lecture. Okay, so not fully sharp distinctions, but we have a lot of characteristics which both of them share. Okay, so here again, I have listed the most important commonalities. So I won't go through them all because I've been through them a few minutes ago. And well, if you want to read that, you will probably agree, probably not. So if you disagree, think about why this is the case. But I think that most of them are agreeable. Okay. Good. Distinctive aspects are also there, right? So for games in their core form, it's mostly about entertainment. Well, you can argue that, right? So we had a discussion about that maintaining and expanding social relations are a clear goal of social games as well, and entertainment is also clearly a thing about social media. However, communication and awareness are more prominent here. Stories and the imaginary are not as strictly present in social media, because social media is about more about real life. But again, we said that in social games we have an increasing overlap between the virtual and the real world. Explicit rules against implicit rules, and we have a bit of a different set of items that are manipulated, right? Characters, magical swords, things like that. Whereas in social media, it's more about manipulating text, photos, and videos. But again, we will find elements of both in each, right? So the unifying class that we want to regard, artificially so if you want, but that's just the motto that we go under, is leisure time oriented application services and platforms, right? Again, a company social network doesn't fall under that, but that's more like the core focus that we want to go after. Good. What is very important is that for this class, social contexts are something that are really important. Okay? So social context, if you remember, is anything that has to do with social relations among users that have relevance for IT systems. Okay? And which need to be measurable through sensors, which we need to be able to model, and which we need to be able to use in our application. Okay? And to take a simple example, or, well, not so simple, so to take a broad example, we will put an emphasis on discussing the role and the form and the model of social contexts in using the example of social networking, because that's the prominent social media. So the motto will be, what's contextual social networking? So, I already mentioned that community-ware or community support was the precursor of social networking, even dating back to the late 1990s, distinguishing various forms of community types that were supported, right? So communities of interest, as the name suggests, are communities of people that have a certain interest. Then communities of practice are communities of people that, for example, live in the same neighborhood, the same city. So there has been a large user base in the early and mid-1990s in terms of urban communities. In Hamburg, for example, using very ancient communication technologies, professional or open innovation. And in those community platforms, we had early prototypes of social networks in the form of buddy lists. Where what is now on Facebook, your friend at that time was called a buddy. Okay. So, in social networking, the main goal is to maintain and expand the social network through communication. Right? And one of the distinguishing characteristics is that we have an explication of social relations. So this is the typical element of social networking. And we users interact using a coherent bundle of social media services. For example, these communication, information, and awareness. They have their personal information spaces, like their wall, their subset of some sort. And another characteristic element is the personal profile. Okay? And that's a publicly accessible subspace of the personal information space. And this is for self-presentation, obviously, right? So again, a very distinctive aspect. We have our own space, but parts of the space are accessible to the public, whereas other parts are only accessible to friends or are even fully private. Right? Good. So, speaking of, right, so what's a possible fine-grained distinction? Why is it maybe not so suitable if people say Facebook is a social network, right? For our purposes, we want to distinguish certain things, right? So a real-world social network is the set of humans together with all their social relations, right? So a cutout of reality, if you want, right? A social network modeling framework is a modeling language which we can use to model real-world social networks. In most cases, this will be the formalism of graph theory, right? So graph theory will provide us with the necessary vocabulary. So one social network model is an element in such a model framework. For example, an undirected graph of vertices and edges. Well, trivially, the nodes represent humans and the edges their social relations. And a social network is an instance of such a social network model, right? So these things we'll need to distinguish. Social networking is a paradigm. Social networking platform is maybe a software such as Elk, right? Social networking platform instance is an instance of that software running on some infrastructure plus a user base. And what you have there is a concrete model instance which models their user-to-user relations. Okay? So typical social networking services seen from this classification into awareness, communication, information are social network management, adding friends and stuff, awareness services, social network analysis, so alerts, who's around, who's in the vicinity, stuff like that, privacy management, you know that from Facebook, group management, Google Plus, the circles, for example, ratings and comments, the likes and the comments on Facebook, all the forms of direct communication and information stuff, right? Blogs and microblogs and even bulletin boards such as the Facebook wall. Good. So, do we have some time? Yeah, we have some time. So, one element here, or one subset. There's a lot of research going on about social networking, and we once used that or methods from social computing to make a landscape or to visualize what's going on in that scientific field, right? So in one of the papers that we did, we came up with a graph visualization of actors, of scientists, doing work on social networking and especially doing work on mobile social networking. And this clearly falls into certain sub-communities, and again, it forms a social network. So there is the guys around Alex Pentland, which work at MIT Media Lab and such institutions. Duncan Watts here, the guy that we will be dealing with in our lecture on real-world social networks, and others, right? So that's a form of using social computing methods to, well, do meta research on social networking research, if you want, right? A few years ago, we came up with a classification framework for mobile social networking as a subset of social networking. And again, we have an overlapping set of classes, right? Social networks, mobile services in general, blogs, and location-based services. And you see that, again, these things are overlapping, and there is concepts such as location-based microblogs, classical microblogs, for example, Twitter, stuff like that. Okay, again, an attempt to come up with a classification schema. Okay, so give a distinction between mobile social networking and social networking. Again, it's a form of social networking where we use a mobile user interface, but which puts an emphasis on the acquisition and modeling of context, right? So you need to have the sensors in your mobile device to measure these contexts. Okay, so what I already mentioned is this book by Alex Pentland. Remember, it was two lectures ago, Honest Signals, where he says, well, mobile social networking is a very important tool to make behavioral studies because we can observe people while really acting, right, in their natural habitat. It has a severe problem set in privacy, a severe problem set in big data. So the question is, how do we deal with that? And you may have heard about initiatives such as decentralized social networking, Diaspora, and others. So there was a colleague at TU Darmstadt who left a while ago that did a lot of work in peer-to-peer social networking. And, well, these are all efforts to deal with these, well, big data, big brother, big data issues. Now, one thing that will lead over to the semantic web is the problem that these various social networking services and social media services don't interoperate very well, right? And that was depicted in this paper by Jung and designated as the data silo problem, right? So your friends in Facebook and your friends in Google Plus are typically disjoint sets. There were initiatives to come up with this, but still there is no unified view, which would be, for example, an agent-based scenario, right? So the data silo problem, you have your information spaces and your contacts, your social networking information, but it's only very limitedly usable in other social networking services and platforms. So one solution that was suggested was API-based approaches. So if each of those platforms would publish an API where you could access your friends or your information spaces, well, that would be maybe a good solution, right? And there was a thing that was called Google Open Social, which is now discarded as far as I know, because nobody implemented it. Yeah, so it was a suggestion to provide an open API, but obviously there is a reason why people don't implement that, and the reason is the user base is the capital of the respective platforms, right? So why would you risk losing people to other platforms by being more interoperable? So that's quite something that it has to do with business. Now, if you think about this business, what you should come up with naturally is agent-based scenarios, right? You having your own social networking agent, possibly running on your mobile device or on your computer, which would then connect to other such agents and form social networks, circles, which can be, equipped with access mechanisms of all sorts. And that these initiatives go under peer-to-peer social networking, right? Live Social was this platform by the guy from TU Darmstadt. Another thing is called Pearson, right? And, obviously these things have never come to a real bloom. Why? Because of the cold start problem. Okay, so if nobody uses these things, it's simply of no use, right? So a slightly different approach to this decentralized social networking is social semantic web. Okay, now what's that? Good. So who of you has heard of semantic web at all? I think I show clearly up, right? Who has never heard of this? Okay, good. So one thing that APIs do is to provide a controlled access to data, right? So you have a function that allows you to collect all the friends of somebody, all the Facebook friends. That's the Facebook API, right? That's what APIs do. Another approach is to equip everything with metadata, right? Because for an API, what you need is a formal semantics for the data. You need to know what friends are. You need to have a syntax and semantics in order to access these things, right? And Semantic Web tries to provide both of that. So there is something that's called the semantic layer cake, and that's here at the left. And this layer cake is a stack of technologies which aim at equipping every data element on the web with metadata such that its semantics are made explicit. Okay. And the core layer is XML. Okay. Because with XML, you would at least have a syntactical separation of concerns, right? So you can distinguish between what's a tag, what's the content, what's formatting, what's transformation. That is already hard with things such as HTML, which mix format and structure, right? So XML separates structure from content from format. Okay. And well, the rest in this semantic web layer cake deals with semantic metadata. And what's that? So the core element of that is ontologies, right? So ontologies are formal specifications of concepts, typically in the form of taxonomic hierarchies, which allow to designate what a certain item is, right? So, for example, I already mentioned this, a human is a concept, right? And you're all instances of that concept. So if someone has a, let's say, a homepage or something very old-fashioned or a profile, then you can say this profile is a representation of that person, and the whole profile is element, in a certain sense, of that concept person, okay? It's also element of the concept profile, okay? It's also element of the concept web entity, if you want something like that, okay? However, all these elements here are targeted towards specifying ontologies, these taxonomies of concepts, in order to designate the nature of things. And why is that? Because classification is the most basic intelligent function that you can perform, right? So if you want to say what's the semantic of something, you first need to clarify its nature, right? So for example, this I know is a table, and this is not a table, okay? This is a chair, obviously, right? So this is the most basic form. Good, we're already there, right? So RDF is a framework which allows you to make statements about things in a simple three-valued way, subject, predicate, object. So this is about, well, two-valued predicates. I'm the author of this website, okay? This is a chair. This is a table. This is a profile, right? That's what RDF does. And all the languages here on Ontology Web Language and RDFS are languages that would not allow you to make these statements about what a certain entity is, but to define the whole hierarchy of concept taxonomies or ontologies, okay? So RDF is about the so-called A box in description logic language. So you assert that this thing here is a table, right? So you make the assertion that something is of a certain nature, while by stating that a human is a subclass of animal, you're making a terminological statement. That's why this is called the T-box part in description logic. And this is done by Ontology Web Language and Resource Description Framework Schema, right? Then you have query languages such as Sparkle, which allow you to really make queries on that system of meta statements, of metadata. And the QL already makes the association with SQL, right? So Sparkle is an SQL-like language to query, for example, triple stores of RDF triples on the web. And on top of that, there is even more advanced layers that deal with logic, for example, because that would be the next level of explicit metadata making logical statements. But semantic web, however intelligent this idea may be, has run into several problems, right? And the first problem is that you need experts to create ontologies, and you also need experts to make even these assertion statements, right? So it's a problem of who provides the data. That's why we have things out there such as DBpedia, right, which at least try to formalize the Wikipedia knowledge in terms of semantic web, right? That's the first thing. And the second thing comes in if you want to, include in these query language, for example, simple statements which are easily realizable in SQL, such as update or insert statements, right? Because if you want to delete a statement about something, for example, you want to delete the statement that this is a table, right? Logically, it's not that simple, because other assertions may already have used this assertion, and by just deleting a simple fact, you can, in many cases, not ensure that all the deductive consequences of that fact are also deleted, right? And that has to do with the semantics of logic, which makes things in semantic web really complicated, right? And however, it's still an idea that's somehow slow cooking at a certain pace, and it's still out there. And on the right side, we have a whole landscape of such ontologies that would enable us to solve this problem, right? Because if you make enough meta statements about the content on the social web, then you will be much more able to come up with a decentralized social media solution that would just make use of these meta statements to form new services. Yeah? And among these are three things that are popular and well known. First thing is FOF. FOF stands for friend of a friend. And this is an ontology that formalizes social relations, right? So who's a friend of whom? So the difference is that the statement, for example, that I'm the friend of Hans, I don't know, yeah, is not made within a platform such as Facebook, in the language of Facebook and in the data structure of Facebook, but it's this statement is made and put out on some web server in the language of FOF so that everyone can access it. Right? So it's a shared conceptualization that is used for solving the data silo problem. That's a really different way to approach things, right? SCoS is a way to formalize simple knowledge that is slightly more adapted to the social case, while SHOC is an ontology that deals with things such as formalizing threat structures in contributions, right? So if you have several text fragments, right, what you want to know is who is the author? Is this text fragment a reply to another text fragment? And is it an answer or is it a comment? All these things can be done with SHOC. A colleague from Galway in Ireland works on these things. Very nice guy. And other elements that are used are this DBpedia, which is a semantic web version of Wikipedia. Okay? And these are all structures that make use of semantic web layer cake and provide certain, ontologies, for example, that would allow us to come up with a decentralized social networking of the future, right? Now, if you ask yourself, well, that's all nice what you tell us, but that's too much on the meta level. I somehow got the idea, but what about the details? So I once did a lecture on semantic web, which also had a part on social semantic web. And if you really want me to elaborate more on this, and if we have time in the end, we can do so, right? But for the moment, it's a bit too much. And those that want more information, I would like you to come to me after the lecture, and I will point you to simple knowledge sources for that, right? So the take-home message is just what is the general idea, what is on ontology, what roughly are the functions of the lower layer cake elements, and what is it that these things are, and what is it that they do? Okay, this is like the course take-home message here. Good. Well, okay, good. So, let's go back to context, okay? Up to the present moment in this lecture, we have, well, I gave you a rough definition of context, and let's dig into this a bit deeper, right? So, the concept of contextual computing is something that has a long history, right? It goes back to the mid-1990s, again at MIT Media Lab, and there were guys such as Ben Shillitt and Roy Wand and all the others, and what they tried to come up with is a definition for context. It reads like this. So context is where you are, who you're with, what resources are nearby, and they wanted to emphasize that context encompasses more than just location. Okay? Now, this is just a listing. It's not so much a structural definition. Okay? Now, Anand Day in the early 2000s came up with this, right? So, context is any information that can be used to characterize the situation of some entity, right? And an entity can be a person, a place, an object, anything that can be designated, right? Anything that has a name, anything that you can somehow grasp, right? Not physically, but also in concept. And, well, it's information about the situation of entities, but only those situations and those entities that are relevant to the interaction between a user and an IT application, right? That's important. So if, for example, there is a spider crawling out here in the lawn, this is certainly entities that I can designate. There's a place in the lawn, there's a grass, there's the spider, there's things such as moving, blah, 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 but it doesn't have anything to do with IT interaction, okay? So it has to be somehow connected to an IT system and the interaction to be considered context in our sense, right? And this is a definition that we can work with, right? It's about interaction situations of entities. Okay, good. Now, a system is context aware if it is able to measure that context, to model it, and to use it, right? So if it uses context to provide relevant information or services to the user, and this what relevant means depends on the respective task, okay? So again, we need to distinguish, and I already mentioned this, some information can be considered input of the respective service, right? So if I have a simple digital computer and I want to compute 1 plus 7, this is input data and not so much contextual data. Now, in the case of Foursquare, we don't know. Is the location information something that is context, or is the location information something that is vital for the service? Is it an input source, an input data? Well, there is a blurring boundary between those two things. So usually context is something that can improve a given service, right? So the service is there without context, and knowing the context improves the service, right? So this definition by Winograd matches that. So context is an operational term. It's context not because of its nature, but because of the way it is used in interpretation. So a location can be context, but it can also be an input parameter of some sort, right? So we need to view the interpretation that this thing is used in, Okay. Naturally, again, people want to classify, so there is a lot of classifications of contexts out there, right? So back in the mid-1990s and very early 2000s, people would distinguish such classes such as computing context. So is there wireless Wi-Fi here or not? This is a contextual information, right? User context, physical context, temporal context, spatial context, blah, 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 blah. A lot of classes, right? And you can easily find about 10 papers coming up with different systems of context, right? Day, Anand Day then said, well, maybe that's a bit too fine-grained. How can we say that something that's in temporal context is not actually in physical context? Isn't time something physical? Well, yeah, good. Then you can come up with relativity theory, blah, 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 blah. Depends on your interpretation, right? So the context classes themselves are already dependent on the use. So he came up with a general attempt, identity, location, and status. But again, this was, again, like the definitions of game, a lot of critics came up that, well, said, well, for certain cases, this is not so ideal. Then Chen and Kotz distinguished active and passive context awareness, right? This is another classification. So active context awareness, as the name suggests, is when the system actively reacts to the context, whereas passive, to the contrary, right? Higher level, lower level depends on the level of abstraction, right? So, for example, your emotional state would be considered higher level context, whereas location would be considered lower level, right? Then we can come up with classification in terms of the dynamics, right? So, in early definitions, context was often designated as something that rapidly changes, right? So locations typically change comparatively rapidly, whereas other things, such as friendship, have a slower pace, right? So context was associated with rapid changes, and context awareness were systems that rapidly change their behavior according to changes in context, whereas personalized services would also change their behavior, but with a much slower pace typically. However, we don't want to follow that because there is rapid context changes and there is slower context changes, but I don't want you to take that too seriously, right? What's maybe more interesting is the temporal reach. So we might talk of long-term, medium-term, and short-term, just reflecting the semantics of change, right? So there is a short-term social, a short-term location context, very short-term. If I would just record my position here in the lecture hall with indoor positioning, for example, this is changing very rapidly, whereas medium term, it's clear that I'm somewhere here on the campus. And the same is true for social context, right? So if you go out with a friend, this is a short-term situation or a medium term. If you just chat with someone and then dissolve the social situation, this is a typical short-term social context, whereas a friendship or kinship, mother-daughter, stuff like that, are long-term social contexts, right? So here's my suggestion, right? So what are context classes for contextual social networking? So first thing, physical context, right? And that involves everything that is not social, is not bound to persons. And this is, as the name suggests, has to do with things that can be really measured with physics sensors. So location, lighting, temperature, even available bandwidth, elements of the computing context, I would consider you could subsume under physical. And then we have individual context and This is about anything that has to do with a user, but not with his social relations, right? So it has to do with disabilities of a user, personal physiological parameters, individual preferences, right? The computing context that says, well, the user is running around with a Apple smartphone, things like that, right? His acceleration, her acceleration, something like that. And then we have the social context, so anything that refers to the social nature, okay? And again, we need to model any form of or any aspect of social interaction that has a relation to the IT system, as I said, right? So the set of IDs of persons in the Bluetooth range, social situations, how many persons are in there, what's their hierarchical interaction pattern, stuff like that. Okay? Good. So, what are facets of social context? Well, we'll be dealing with that a lot in this lecture, so let's think about facets. Okay. So first of all, we can distinguish explicitly provided from implicitly detected social context. So what you explicitly provide, for example, is your Facebook friendship. You must declare this via handshaking, okay? Well, implicitly is more about detecting the characteristics of social situations, yeah? So this week in the magazine Der Spiegel, there's a large article about effective computing, right? So if you use effective computing techniques to detect the emotional state of persons that are currently interacting, you might call this implicitly detected social context, right? Short-term, long-term is clear. Within the IT system, or, well, outside the IT system is another axis. So, for example, if there's a bunch of persons using a tabletop-based music composition system, there is a tabletop, and on that tabletop there's a software running, and there's noise, there's sounds that are synthesized, and people make gestures on the tabletop, altering the groove and the timbre, the sound of certain instruments. That's all the things that happen inside the system. There's interaction between persons that's mapped in the system. But there is also something outside, right? How do the people position themselves with respect to the system, okay? Okay, good. What's their social attitude, for example, right? For example, what's their relation? What's the territoriality while interacting with the system? Okay, that's things that happen outside. So binary versus annary is another definition, and explicit use versus implicit use. Okay. Good. So how can we apply social context? Assuming that we have it, we modeled it, we detected it, we have it, how can we use it? Okay. So First example is this collaborative filtering, right? So in classical collaborative filtering, what you have is similarities in terms of ratings. Yeah? What would happen if you chose the neighborhood not so much based on the similarity in ratings, but much more so on the basis of social context? What would happen if you recommend what your friends like? What would come out, okay? It turns out that this depends on the actual nature of the items. If the items are taste-related, then you can show that this works as well as collaborative filtering, in some cases even better. If the items are not taste-related, then these things perform not as well, right? You can use the context in order to set privacy automatically, right? One idea would be to say you're at a fair, you're presenting something and you want people to have access to your information material only in case that some interaction has taken place, right? In order to avoid fraud and espionage, for example, right? You can use it in social life logging. So there's a whole plethora of application scenarios for social context. And, well, we'll have a look at this later on. Yes. By taste. Okay, bless you. So, taste would be items such as movies, fashion, music, items that somehow, well, have to do with taste, whatever that means. So you, it's maybe still subject to research what this distinction really means, right? But if it's more about neutral information, then the social filtering idea is not as strong as for things such as, well, movies or clubs, for example, right? And this has to do with the normative nature of social groupings, right? So it's not only that your friends have the same taste as you, because that would be too simple. It's more like that your friends' tastes have secondarily or indirectly a meaning for you, because you want to know what's hip in your social circles, because that's how you define your social identity, right? This is more like a secondary effect, okay? Good. So, that's such as that. Now, there's some more slides where we would really come up with a more mathematical view on things, because now some might say, well, it's been very general. We all know that somehow. Could you be more precise? Could you be more mathematical? Yes, we will. So the next lecture, which will be tomorrow, is starting with social network analysis. And social networks are naturally a simple form of long-term social context that we will look at. And we will see in the beginning how we can define which actors on such a network are central. Who's important on a network? And we'll come up with the respective math in order to do that, ranging from simple things such as degree-based centrality to more elaborate things such as page rank. Okay, so for those that want to come, see you tomorrow. Okay.